Welcome to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. Dr. Levine is a doctor of internal medicine and is ready to take your calls at 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI. You can listen to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on the air, online at KLVI.com, or on your phone with the free iHeartRadio app. Now, here's Dr. Levine.
Welcome, Southeast Texas Internet Radio listeners. This is Dr. Levine. Welcome to another edition of the Dr. Levine Medical Hour. We are here at the studios, KLVI, here in Beaumont, Texas, taking your phone calls. Happy to hear from you. Give us a buzz, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. Here we focus on health care, and answering medical questions just to try and help you with your particular medical problem. And we're still in our pandemic, but it's really, really quiet, and we really, really like it that way. We don't want a lot of admissions or sick people. Yes, we're still recommending vaccines and not really too much about booster vaccines, but certainly I think that the big news this past week was that one of the vaccines will be available for the pediatric population, and that will start entering into the school systems and pediatricians' offices fairly soon. So, you know, that's a good thing in our opinion, just because the medical community believes in vaccines, and it certainly has allowed us to, again, control infection rates. And we still have to understand that it is all about control, not necessarily 100%, but significant reduction. And that's really our whole goal and focus and purpose of the vaccine program. And it's, in my opinion, worked very well over the past several years, not just COVID, but with targeted infections over the years that used to plague Americans and cause a lot of death and dying. And we know about antibiotics and how that's helped revolutionize healthcare around the world, but certainly vaccines have allowed us to do that as well. So we're still big believers in that. Yes, it's controversial. Medicine in and of itself is a controversial area. That's really the essence of medicine, disagreement, to be honest with you. However, it generates good ideas. It keeps everybody on their toes when you have specialist experts with a different perspective, a different angle on whatever the topic is. Again, it's good ground, fertile ground for growth and development and innovation. So healthcare promotes that, and medicine promotes that. We like to have open discussions about whatever it is, whether it be COVID vaccine, mRNA vaccine versus the traditional method of making vaccines. We like all that in medicine. That's how medicine works. That's how it grows and matures and perfects its deficiencies and continues to improve and get better. That's how it happens. So I know it's maybe a little bit frustrating for the average American, and really that's why I tried to be available for at least 1 hour a week, just to see if we can figure that out and make it more simplified. But honestly, you know, America has a lot of information available to itself, to its general population. The experts sort of making these official statements have a lot of information. And sometimes even for experts, it is somewhat confusing and it doesn't make sense, almost like that physical complaint that you have that no one can, quote, figure out. You've been to multiple doctors here, there, everywhere, and we just can't figure out what's wrong with that physical symptom. And there are a lot of people out there like that. For the most part, we will be able to diagnose most patients' problems most of the time accurately, efficiently, quickly, and get them back on their feet. But there are patients out there, and you probably know who you are, that have physical ailments, and you've been to what are considered good doctors, good institutions, you've taken what is considered good medications, and for whatever reason, you don't feel better. You still feel the same. There's still no conclusion. I talk a lot to patients there in the office about their frustration when they go to different medical outlets, whether it be a minor care or an emergency department, a different consultant, and they sort of getting different diagnoses, even though the lab work is the same, their physical complaint is the same, they're sort of getting thrown different diagnoses. So healthcare and healthcare delivery, especially in this country, is rooted in sort of this discussion process or this discovery process where practitioners might have a different perspective on what's causing a person's problem and a different perspective on the way to manage it and treat it. Just, again, the country that we have so many options a lot of times to whatever the topic of discussion is or the decision-making, we have different choices. It's not just one. Actually, we don't like just one choice. We like to have multiple choices when it comes to healthcare, just because every patient's condition is not going to fit into the hole that we want it to, and we need to have different options or different ways to approach it and think about it. Again, that's just the way healthcare is, but certainly been somewhat counterproductive with our pandemic efforts from day one, how experts have different opinions about what to do or what's recommended. And we have made progress in trying to conform to what most experts are saying and having an open discussion about if someone disagrees and why they disagree and trying to see their logic behind that to make sense of what that is. So again, I'm like everyone else. It's frustrating for me as well when some patients are asking me questions about certain things and I'm not quite sure what the correct answer is. And you know, that's always been a great way to answer patients, is just letting them know you don't know, even though you've looked into it and you've done your best to try and discover what the truth is. Sometimes it's undiscoverable at the time for various reasons, whether you don't have the proper information or it's just something new and we haven't had time to look into it completely. But again, that's what keeps the medical engine running and humming all the time, day and night, which is why a new technique like the mRNA technique to generate this vaccine very rapidly, that's really the only way that that happened, is you have all of these very intellectual, very inspiring people in these industries that are using modern technology to discover new ways to do things, faster ways, efficient ways. And really, that's all the mRNA vaccine represents, is just that whole passion of trying to find a new technique and a new way of doing things so that the country is better, the world is better, and we can try and keep an upper hand with this battle we have with the bacterial and microorganism world, which is out there all the time, and we'll never be able to get rid of it completely, but we've done an excellent job, in my opinion, as a medical community in this country, controlling and battling this microorganism world that's out there. When we talk about viruses and bacteria and fungus, parasites, infections. Remember, that used to be really the biggest issue in our country, when the country was founded, that's really what Americans were dying from, and that's what generated a lot of morbidity and mortality, you know, things like tuberculosis and flu infections, pneumonia. I mean, those sort of diseases used to take Americans out pretty early just because there just wasn't any treatment. And then, again, one thing leads to another. An inquisitive person, maybe a person who wasn't, you know, accepted in his community, or he or she wasn't accepted in a community because they thought outside the box. Because, you know, we sort of like conformity to a certain degree. It makes us all feel comfortable. It gives us that predictability that we're always looking for every day in terms of the day we want. You know, we sort of have a game plan in our mind in terms of what's supposed to happen for the day, morning, noon, and in the evening. And we sort of want it to go that way every single day. It makes us feel comfortable when things unfold and unravel in that very predictable fashion. You know, we think the up is up and down is down. It's only when it doesn't work out that way, that's when we start getting a little stressed, a little anxious, and worried about things. And again, that's just sort of human nature. And I guess as you go through life, you realize that a lot of this stuff is not in your control, and you have to sort of anticipate or expect that the day is not going to unfold in the way that you want it to. But, you know, there's no reason to panic or get upset. Just have to try and push through it and figure out a solution to that problem. And this pandemic and our efforts with the pandemic have been no different. Here we're sitting almost 2 years into this thing, and we have vaccines out, multiple vaccines. They're getting to the young kids. For right now, knock on wood, it's pretty quiet when it comes to cases. And we're not just getting horribly sick as we go into the holidays in terms of people getting together and gathering. And yes, okay, we're going to expect some cases, right? People are getting together, people are gathering. So that always happens when people travel and get together. These infection rates kind of start to pick up. But all the experts are trying to crunch the numbers every day and look at what's going on around the world to try and help us predict what's going to happen in the next few months with the pandemic here locally, nationally. And it's you know, it's really anyone's guess. I get asked that question all the time, and you try to give the best answer that you know how, but obviously it's anyone's guess in terms of what's going to happen as we come together as family and celebrate the holidays, which we always look forward to. It's just such a fun, festive time. It's cold, it's not hot and muggy, we don't have to worry about hurricanes or flooding. You know, it's just almost like you can take your shoes off and relax for once, just because it's been so tense for the entire year. Everyone always looks forward to the holiday season. A lot of eating, a lot of celebrating, which is fine. And but yeah, we're going to see some spikes in our cases. But again, hopefully, according to the experts, we shouldn't see, again, these huge, enormous tsunami spikes that we just saw maybe a month ago. Again, because that's normally what happens with pandemics. They kind of fizzle out, they kind of burn out, right, as our immunity, whether it be natural or with vaccines, as the immunity in our area grows continually every single day, then the ability of that infection to really infect a large population at a very rapid rate, at those levels that we saw, which is when you start talking about pandemic, endemic, epidemic, all these sorts of things. It has to do with the rate of infection and the percentage of people that are getting infected at a certain rate. That's really what characterizes that. You know, obviously, if it just kind of stays locally in your area, that's more sort of an endemic sort of problem. And I guess the thing that comes to mind a lot of times when you're reading is malaria in certain parts of Africa. But as it reaches more of a national, global level, let's say malaria got to Beaumont, Texas, you know, that's more of a pandemic and less of an endemic. These are some terms that have been thrown around since the pandemic started. And that's what's so crazy about the things that happen. You know, as we've had a lot of hurricanes here recently, and you start hearing this terminology that the meteorologists are using, millibars and things like that, you know, terms you would never use, right? And now that we're in a pandemic, people are starting to use these different terminologies, endemic, pandemic, epidemic, and getting familiar with all that. So it's, you know, it's cute. Anyway, if you have any calls, give us a or questions, give us a call at the station, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. I'll be back.
You're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560-KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
All right, welcome back to the show, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI, Dr. Levine in the house. Hey, Barton from Beaumont, you're live. What's up?
Yes, doctor, I've been diagnosed by a urologist as having an enlarged bladder. And for 3 months, I took this medicine he prescribed, oxybutynin, I think's the name of it.
Uh-huh.
And it hadn't helped me a bit. And goodness, I have to get up in the middle of the night about 3 or sometimes 4 times a night. And it's about to drive me nuts. And I'm trying to get in with another urologist to see if he's got a better plan. And I was just wondering, how would you treat enlarged bladders?
Did he tell you why your bladder was enlarged?
No, sir.
Okay. And did they do any sort of testing on the way your bladder works or the way you urinate or how much fluid your bladder can hold?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, these are some other tests that can be done. You know, I tell this to all patients when doctors or healthcare professionals make a decision about certain therapeutics, sometimes it doesn't work, okay? And that's sort of expected. We don't always get the right therapeutic the first time around. So I guess if I were your primary care physician and you came to me and asked me the same question, I would probably recommend just getting back with the urologist that you have originally seen and let them know that the medication is not effective and you're still struggling with your sleep and you need to consider something else. A lot of times you can call their offices and get an answer over the phone even without going in because they've already evaluated you and seen you. I certainly understand getting a second opinion. However, based on what you're telling me, it would seem a little premature, in my opinion. I would try and work with this urologist a little bit longer, let them sort of go through their decision tree in terms of what's next, what's third, what's fourth. I think if you've given the urologist a good amount of time to work through the problem, you're not getting anywhere, and they seem frustrated or sort of at the end of their line, then I think at that time it would be good to get – that's when it's time to get a second opinion. But there's probably a few different medicines he can try on you, and they have this testing called urodynamics – where they basically put a liquid into your bladder and they can kind of measure how well your bladder works and how much liquid it's going to take to make you go to the restroom, sort of get a better idea of what's mechanically and physiologically happening. And then they can Go ahead.
I see. I'll give that a try. I'll give him a call back and see if I can get in to see him again.
Well, yeah, I think you can. A lot of times, just like all doctors, they have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week phone call service. So I would just call his office today and see if that's possible and get somebody on the phone, whether it be a nurse or even the doctor, and say, hey, this medicine's not working. I'm miserable. Is there anything else you got?
Very good. Okay, well, you've helped me out.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it. Give us a call back, okay? Let us know how things worked out.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barton. All right. And Ed, Lake Charles, you're live. What's up?
Yes, sir. I'm calling to get, I guess, an opinion on it. I've got high blood pressure that I take medication, amlodipine. Amlodipine is what I'm taking to control that blood pressure, and it works fine. But I've been reading a little bit this and that and the other, you know, internet surfing, and they're talking about using nitric oxide to lower blood pressure. And I was calling to see what you thought about that application.
Yeah, you know, we have several different classes of blood pressure medications on the market, and amlodipine is a very good class. I use a lot of amlodipine, or Norvasc is the brand name. So it just depends on what we're trying to accomplish. A lot of times when we choose one class of blood pressure medicines over another, doctors do have access to guidelines, high blood pressure guidelines, where experts on high blood pressure have convened and they've sort of wrote out this guideline package that tells practitioners like myself, we can go to this. We have websites that we can go to and look up the latest recommendations on using high blood pressure medicine in terms of which class to use first, which class to use second, etc. So nitric oxide has, or using that for blood pressure control, typically is not the first line of medications that we use. Normally we will reach for that if you have heart blockages in your blood vessels that go to your heart, or maybe you have some issues with your legs, peripheral vascular disease. We'll start using nitric oxide or variants of nitric oxide to help with that. But normally that's not one of the blood pressure medicine classes that we reach for first. That's normally if you have coronary artery disease or angina, you know, we'll use the nitric oxide sort of medications. But
now that you brought that up, that's something else that I hadn't thought about. Was I have severe leg cramps and you know, day and night, not every day and not every night. And I finally figured out I wasn't drinking enough water, and I was partially dehydrated probably. But sometimes it's just like my legs just lock up, and I'm wondering if I have a obstructed blood flow to my legs, you know, that may be partially causing those cramps.
Well, yeah, that's always a possibility. There are risk factors for the development of peripheral vascular disease, or PAD, and it's the typical bread-and-butter risk factors we talk about every day. Smoking, in my opinion, is the number one risk factor. Diabetes is number two. High cholesterol, kind of three. Obesity, family history, so forth and so on. So it's very simple to evaluate and screen for. As a matter of fact, insurance companies are more and more asking healthcare professionals like myself to screen for PAD and PVD in the office. And there's a couple of different ways to do it. For me, I just use ultrasounds, very easy, very quick, where we basically look at your flow in your legs, and the text or the person reading the report can very easily see if you have good flow or bad flow. And if there's some suggestion that you have bad flow, then we can do what we call a CTA, which is a CAT scan, which can really give us very fine, exquisite definition or a picture of how your circulation looks. There's also a technique where they can check blood pressures in your lower legs, and they basically compare the difference of your blood pressure in your thigh versus your lower leg, and they put it into a ratio, and if that ratio is high, then it sort of suggests that you have this poor circulation. So it's very easy to check. And again, the way you have to think about it is if you have more of these risk factors, especially if you smoke and you're starting to have problems, then it's probably a good idea to get it checked out. So just talk with your primary care doctor, and they should be able to get that set up very easily.
All right. Well, the obesity part's out because, and I'm 74 years old. You know, 6'2", weigh about 215 pounds. That's constant because a long time ago I figured if I got a little over that, 5 or 10 pounds, my right knee would get fluid on it and lose the weight, the fluid goes away. So I'm just trying to keep everything, you know, as lined up as I can. But boy, I'm going to tell you what, them leg cramps, and when you get them, yeah, in both legs, across your thighs, I mean, you're nearly paralyzed. You can't hardly walk. And that's one thing I really need to get somebody's opinion on, what's going on with that, and if there's anything to, you know, to take to eliminate it. I sure need to do that.
Do you take any medications?
The only thing I take is I've got an enlarged prostate. I had prostate cancer about 6 years ago. I had it treated at MD Anderson. Proton radiation, and I take Flomax and amlodipine, and then I take vitamins, you know, zinc and some green, live green, which is basically barley in a capsule, and other than that, you know, I'm in pretty good health for my age, I think, but them leg cramps is one thing I need to get rid of. And I would love to get off the blood pressure medicine if I can, because I'm just, I'm not an anti-medicine person, but the least amount of medication that I can take, the better off I am mentally.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I understand, brother. Well, yeah, go get that checked out. Just ask your healthcare professional and see if they can get that figured out.
Good deal. Appreciate it.
Appreciate your phone call. You have a good week. And we'll go on our second break, 896-KOVI, 1-800-330-KOVI. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
All right, welcome back. 896-KLVI or 1-800-330-KLVI. Phone calls are much appreciated. Again, some previous callers concerned, you know, about poor circulation, peripheral vascular disease, PAD, as an acronym, peripheral arterial disease. There's also a condition called venous insufficiency, which is extremely common in our country, that normally involves some chronic swelling of the legs from the knee down. We see a lot of that, and it's a very frequent complaint. And again, unfortunately, that tends to be related to, number one, being overweight, which unfortunately most Americans are struggling with their weight. And as you go up in your poundage, the circulation in your lower extremities does change hemodynamically and tends to promote this swelling that occurs just because the circulation is not as brisk as it should. And it starts to change the pressure variance in your circulation, tends to promote this leakage of fluid into your skin. And that's what generates that swelling that you can see. And it's just a circulatory problem that can occur. Gordon from Port Neches, you're live. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have two questions for you. What is the difference between sea salt and regular salt you buy in a container from like Morton Cats? What's the difference in the two?
One is called sea salt and one is called salt. I think that the manufacturer would want you to think that there, at the end of the day, there's a big difference. You know, some people might feel like sea salt is more flavorful or makes their food taste better. And that's all fine and dandy. I don't have a problem with that. But in terms of your health, there is absolutely no difference between sea salt and just regular table salt in terms of impacting your chances of becoming ill or sick or reducing your chances of becoming ill or sick. I think there are some people out there that would make you want to think that way. But that's one of those things as a doctor and as just a regular individual, I'm not going to get fooled by that one because that's just untrue and that's never going to be true. That if I consume sea salt from the Himalaya, that I'm going to live 10 years longer if I just get some old regular salt from Walmart. That there's no study research that said, you know, so it comes down to personal choice, right? But it's certainly, if you're trying to be healthy and you're trying to figure out, okay, well, how can I change my life? What can I do today to change? It's never going to come down to the type of salt, ever.
Okay, my second question is, it says in container, this salt does not contain supplement iodine. This does not supply iodine. Okay, then the bottom it says it's a necessity nutritious. However, one thing it says you need iodine, but the top says it does not contain iodine. I mean, do I need to buy iodine in a tablet? Because it says here this salt does not supply iodine and necessity nutrition. Necessary nutrition. What's going on?
Do you need to buy iodine tab? No.
I don't know. I mean, it says, does the body need iodine? Well, I mean, this one does not supply. Do I need iodine in my body?
Well, yeah, but you don't necessarily have to go out and buy supplements just because, I mean, if you're a typical American, yeah, most of the food that you eat is going to have salt in it, and that salt's going to contain iodine. So iodine deficiency is a medical problem, not in this country. I mean, maybe in some third world countries where food and acquiring food is a problem, but not in this country. And okay, it hadn't been like that.
So I don't need to worry about none of that.
No.
Right? Okay, I just want to said on the label. And Alder Salt says that, so I didn't know what was going on with the. It says you need it, but this doesn't contain it, so I didn't know if I should buy something or not. I didn't know.
No.
You know, they got vitamins for everything nowadays,
right?
And so I didn't know if I needed
and
to
salt
buy
too.
A supplement. Yes, sir. So I didn't know. That's why I called you up.
Yeah, no supplement. Again, iodine deficiency is a known issue, but not in this country. Again, it'd have to be a third world country, or you would have to be starved for whatever reason in terms of your type of nutrition. But because as Americans, we have access to all sorts of food items, and most of it is going to be processed. Again, because most people don't have gardens in their backyard, they don't have livestock, they're not butchering their own animals and growing their own plants. We eat a lot of processed food every day, and it's hard to get away from that, right? Because that's who's supplying most of our food, these big food industries. And they do all sorts of things to the food before it actually gets to your plate. And one of the things that they do is they include salt. They put it in there, and it has some benefit somehow, certainly with taste, sometimes preservation. And so it's not anything that, in terms of iodine by itself, that only element that you have to reach out and go find a supplement just because you're getting that iodine in all the other food items that you're eating, which is why we promote a balanced diet, which is why we kind of cringe when someone wants to sort of narrow down to one sort of ingredient that they're going to eat all the time and exclude other things, because the human body is really not designed to eat like that or to live like that. Only in America, because we have the option to do that, can we do that, right? If we don't want to eat certain things, fine, we got options. We can go get this food or that food. Well, you know, in some countries or some parts of the world, they don't have all those options, right? And they're sort of limited in being able to do that, but we can do it here. But no, just vegetables, you know, lean meat, nuts and seeds, beans, whole grains, all that stuff has enough iodine in it that you should be fine.
Okay, all we read these labels on these salt containers. I wonder why did they say we need it and they don't have it in the salt? What's going on? So I figured it's a good time to ask the doctor.
Well, yeah, you know, the labeling of food items changes, and it has a lot to do with the politics behind food in terms of what needs to be on the label. I think if you're a manufacturer or something, you don't want any labels, right? It's kind of a headache.
Yeah.
And but they have the FDA and they have a lot of other consumer organizations that they want the public, the general public, to be educated about, well, what are you eating? Again, because I said this is processed food. So, yeah. You know, we want the manufacturers out there to sort of let us know, what are you doing with this product? What's in this can that I'm about to consume? So, yeah, I think they're just letting you know, hey, it doesn't contain iodine, but that's okay because the other food item that you're eating does contain iodine. And you don't need a lot every day, and your body can conserve iodine, right? It has a way of storing a lot of these elements and these nutrients that we have. So you always have sort of backup reserves waiting around in case, for whatever reason, you go a week and you don't eat any iodine. Your body has a storage of iodine, and they can just pull from that and supply you with the iodine that you need. And it normally takes a significantly prolonged period of not consuming a certain nutrient before your body starts to show signs of deficiency. You're talking about 6 months, several months, right, of continual absence of some sort of nutrient before it actually will start to cause deficiency, true deficiency. But again, because of our country and our wealth and our access to food and beverages, that's just not going to happen, really. I mean, you would really have to work at not being able to have that. You'd have to work at it. It would be hard, too.
And I thank you a lot for telling me about this stuff. I was always kind of curious about it. I see it on the label. I said, "Well, if this it, we need it. Why are they not having it?" So I'm glad I spoke to you. I really appreciate that.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate the phone call. All right, Gordon. You have a good evening. And yeah, I mean we're battling excess nutrition in our country. That's the problem. We got too much of it, man. It's everywhere. And it's really interesting. And you know, you don't have to read a whole lot, but there's been a lot of publication about the food industry since the food industry sort of exploded. And I would probably say it was sort of happening when I was maybe in junior high school, just noticing more and more processed products that were available to us, that were quick and convenient and easy, that, you know, mom and dad didn't have to spend hours in the kitchen or going to the grocery store every day to get fresh products and having to grow a garden in the backyard, which we did have, by the way, which is still the best way, in my opinion, to get your food. But, man, it's cumbersome, right? You have to know how to grow a garden and you got to manage it and you got to get all the supplies, and you know, if you can just walk down the store and get your apple and your tomato and your cucumber, and I mean, man, it's just too easy, right? So there's a lot of discouragement for the average person to actually grow their own food, but there's people out there that do that. It's just that most of us are just not going to do that. It's just too convenient to go down to the grocery store and get your food. You know, now with the internet the way it is and Amazon the way it is, there's now websites you can go to and actually order fresh produce, you know, online. Not even from local grocery stores. You can get access to other foreign markets where there are websites you can go to and there's food you can get from Asia or South America. All you have to do is have a credit card and you got your menu there, and you can pick and choose all sorts of food from all over the world. So these sort of deficiencies that can sometimes occur, vitamin deficiencies or mineral deficiencies, in this country, unlikely, right? It's really trying to figure out what not to eat. We have to really work at not overeating in this country just because there's just so much food available all the time, every single day. Whether you're going to a movie theater, whether you're flying, whether you're traveling, you know, it's just food and beverages everywhere that you really have to stop and understand that the human body is really not designed, as it stands right now, it's not designed to take in the number of calories that we're taking in every day for the amount of energy expenditure that we're doing every day. It's really not designed for that, which is why we get into a lot of our health problems. It doesn't, and I say this to my patients all the time, it doesn't make you a bad person, right? It doesn't. You're living in a country with, you know, with excess food and beverage all around you. It's easy to do it, and it's not like you're trying to be a bad person. The stuff's delicious. It makes you feel good. So, you know, it's just it's an easy setup, right? And you really have to work at not eating it and at not drinking it. That's the hard part. You know, because it's in your face all the time and we're celebrating and you come home from a hard day's work. You know, you want pleasure. You want reward for spending all day at work and dealing with your boss or dealing with your coworker or whatever problem that came up during the day. You want some sort of relief. You know, exercise is going to be better, but who's got time for that, right? So, hey, yeah, a lot of times we eat certain things as a reward. And studies have shown, you know, what we eat. Again, you're not a bad person. We love the sugar. We love the salt in foods. We love breads. We love the starches. It's wonderful. So, yeah, we have to work at that. And that's why I'm here on this show, try and help you and figure out a solution because everybody chooses differently. Anyway, we're going to our last break. Phone lines are still open, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. I'll be back.
You're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
All right, welcome back to the show. At the end of the show, man, an hour goes by so fast. But we can get one more question in if you would like. 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. Again, if you have not received your vaccine, please go out and get it. Flu vaccines are here. And yes, you can get the flu vaccine with the COVID vaccine, with the pneumonia vaccine, with the shingles vaccine. Now, you might not want to get it all in one day. I certainly understand that just because, again, vaccines can generate some physical symptoms. And honestly, with the other vaccines, there's no urgency to that. Obviously, because we're in a pandemic, we're prioritizing COVID vaccine. And I want to thank all the patients coming into the office who have received those vaccines. I would have to say my patients, it's been fairly high acceptance rate. I would say over 95% of my patients claim that they have taken the vaccine. So I want to congratulate them on that. But again, even before COVID hit, there was just always a group of folks that just don't like vaccines. It makes them feel bad and they just don't want to go through that. And the country is getting on board with vaccines. Businesses are getting on board with that, making it somewhat difficult for an employee, not necessarily mandating it, but they sure are making it hard to sort of freely move around the company or the business if you don't have a vaccine. And so a lot of people are deciding for that purpose really only that even though they're sort of against it, it's just becoming too inconvenient to keep fighting it. And they're just going to go ahead and get it just so that they can move on with their lives, just because a lot of these businesses are just making it more difficult to not be vaccinated. And in my opinion, I think that's a good thing in terms of trying to encourage everyone to get their do their part so that we can move on and get on with our lives. I mean, it's wonderful and it's pleasurable. As the way it stands right now, it's extremely quiet on the Western Front, and we want to keep it that way just because, again, especially with this last Delta variant, it seemed to be a lot more lethal to me in terms of if you had to be hospitalized for it. And again, we don't want some newer variant that is more lethal than the Delta variant. We don't want that possibility. And so vaccines extremely helpful in controlling all that and preventing that and reducing that. Reduction, right? That's the main theme. Not 100%, but reduce, control, which is what we always try to do with these vaccines and everything that we do. We're just trying to control it to a certain degree so that we don't walk around looking behind our backs worrying about some infection or some pandemic. We want to think freely and enjoy our day and think positive about our day. And certainly that helps, in my opinion. Anyway, thanks for another edition of the Dark Levine Medical Hour. Don't drink and drive. Drink your water. Eat some vegetables. We'll see you next week.